Oyez, 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 the Honorable Court of Appeals for the Third District of the State of Texas, sitting in Austin, is now in session.
Good morning.
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 Good morning.
Welcome to the Third Court of Appeals. We have one case set for oral argument this morning. As you know, this matter is being recorded and shown live via YouTube. This hearing is being conducted in accordance with the emergency orders of the Texas Supreme Court in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. If you're not speaking, you're asked to mute yourself so that the background noise will be kept at a minimum. Many of the justices will keep their themselves unmuted so that if they have questions of the speaker, they'll be able to promptly ask those questions. But those of you who are the advocates today, we would ask for that courtesy. Your videos will be continuously shown to the public, whether or not you are speaking. The chat function is not available for this hearing. So if you're having technical difficulties that arise in the proceeding, please reach out via text to the court clerk so that we can correct the problem. The audio recording of this proceeding will be available later today on the court's website. This video recording is only being conducted live and will not be available on the court's website. At this point, I'd like to call for ready announcements from the attorneys in this morning's case, which case is CV20129, Cutter Foundation versus Ken Paxton and Zacor Legal Institute. But prior to the counsel's announcement of ready, the court notifies the parties and observers of this proceeding that the court will realign the parties in this case post-submission to reflect their proper appellate alignment, specifically reflecting that Ken Paxton, as the real party in interest, is aligned with Cutter Foundation in this appeal. Right. So at this point, counsel's, please introduce yourself and announce ready, and we'll start with Cutter.
Good morning, Your Honor. Wallace Jefferson for Cutter Foundation, and I'm ready.
Thank you. And for Ken Paxton's office.
Good morning, Your Honor. Kim Fuchs for the Attorney General, and we're ready.
Thank you. And now for Zacor.
Good morning, Chief Justice Byrne and Justices Baker and Smith. I'm Dale Wainwright at Greenberg Traurig, representing Zacor Legal Institute.
Thank you. In this case, for those of you who are new and observing the Third Court of Appeals, so you'll know, each side is allocated 20 minutes to argue. Mr. Jeff Kyle, the court clerk, has already coordinated with the attorneys that have just introduced themselves on the time allocations desired for this proceeding. And as many of you already know, we do reserve at the end some amount of time for the appellant's rebuttal. Therefore, in this case, Cutter will have 11 minutes to argue their case, followed by Ken Paxton's argument of 4 minutes. Then the appellee, Zacor, will have their full 20 minutes to argue, followed by 5 minutes of rebuttal for Cutter. We have a time warning system that you can see on your video here to assist the attorneys in knowing when their time is up. When the yellow light comes on, you have 2 minutes to wrap up that segment of your argument. When the red light comes on, your time is up. If you're in the middle of a point when the red light comes up, please try to conclude that point efficiently at that time. You may be authorized more time at the court's discretion. And with that, counsels will hear from our prior Chief Justice, Wallace Jefferson, for Cutter. You may proceed, counsel.
May it please the court. The foundation suit here is permitted in section 552.325 of the Public Information Act. And that statute recognizes a person or entity's right to file suit against the Attorney General seeking to withhold information from a requester. That is going to be our main focus on this appeal, but we have several other arguments that back that up. So second, if that plain language that I just referred to is not enough, the Supreme Court of Texas has confirmed it. In Boeing versus Paxton, a case that originated in Travis County and went through the Third Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court said the legislature intended private parties to have standing or the right to protect their interest in the information protected by Section 552.104 through the judicial remedy provided in Section 552.325. Now, that language may be familiar to this court because the Supreme Court adopted Justice Pemberton's concurrence in the Boeing case that was at the Third Court of Appeals. Third, the Attorney General agrees that the foundation may bring this suit. It, just like the foundation, opposed Zacher's plea to the jurisdiction in the trial court. And in this appeal, the Attorney General takes the same position as the foundation, that the plain language of the Public Information Act, confirmed by Boeing, permits this suit. And fourth, Zacher cannot assert a sovereign immunity defense. But in any event, the legislature has waived immunity. It has provided a judicial remedy for private parties to conduct this lawsuit. And then fifth, if we get there, A&M University is not an indispensable party. As this court recently recognized, A&M is under no current duty to provide the requested information, and enforcement of the trial court's order has been stayed pending resolution of this appeal. So in sum, the foundation simply seeks its day in court to have the exceptions to the Public Information Act heard. That statute, a Supreme Court precedent, and a case recently decided by this court, I don't think it's cited in our briefs, it's the Genuine Parts case, Justice Baker, an opinion that you authored, permits this lawsuit. So the trial court should reach the merits, and this court can make that happen by remanding to the trial court for that purpose. So let's start with the language of the statute. Section 552.325 permits this suit. It says, quote, a governmental body, officer for public information, or other person or entity, that would be Cutter Foundation, that files a suit seeking to withhold information from a requester, may not file suit against the person requesting the information. The requester, nevertheless, is entitled to intervene, and that's what Zacher did here. Continuing with the statute, it says, quote, the governmental body, officer for public information, or other person or entity that files the suit, that would be the Cutter Foundation, must show that it made a good faith effort to inform the requester of, quote, the fact that the suit is against the Attorney General and Travis County District Court. We read this to mean that the statute authorizes a suit by a person or entity that is not a governmental body and not a public information officer against the Attorney General of the state of Texas.
Counsel, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Do you foresee, if Zacher's argument is correct and contained in their briefs, do you foresee that if private entities are in fact not that other person that can bring this suit, that actually the government might be harmed because private entities would not contract with the government because all of their documentation would be open to the world and they would have no opportunity to protect it themselves? What are your thoughts about that?
Yes, I think that is an accurate statement. And so there are two problems with their interpretation. And you put your finger on a very important one. There are all kinds of contractual relationships with private entities that involve trade secrets and proprietary information, competitive bidding that the private entity would have no desire to enter into if its information is going to be shared with the world. And that is why there are specific exceptions in the statute that applied when this case was tried that protect that sort of information from public disclosure. Section 552.104, for example, which protects from disclosure information related to competition or bidding, or Section 552.110, which relates to confidentiality of trade secrets or certain commercial or financial information. So I think that is an extremely important point for this court to consider. And then on top of this, we believe that this question has already been answered by the Supreme Court. In Boeing versus Paxson, the court answered whether a private third party, in that case Boeing, had standing to assert that a Public Information Act exception protected its information from disclosure by a governmental body. There it was the Port Authority of San Antonio, or whether the exception is exclusively for the government's benefit. And the court found standing. It said, and I quoted this before, the legislature intended private parties to have standing or the right to protect their interests in the information protected by 552 through the judicial remedy provided in section 552.235. Now, Zacher says Boeing is dicta because no party in that case expressly challenged jurisdiction, but Boeing is not dicta. The court's holding that Boeing had standing to assert its interest was based first on Boeing's right to protect its privacy and property interests under the Public Information Act. And second, Boeing's prerogative to exercise that right through the judicial remedy provided in section 352.325. I would refer this court back to Justice Pemberton's concurrence. Remember the Supreme Court adopted that part of the concurrence that said 325 provides a judicial remedy. But the concurrence also said this, and we think it's an accurate statement of the law. Justice Pemberton's concurrence from this court acknowledged that, quote, Public Information Act section 552.325 waives sovereign immunity to permit not only governmental bodies, but also private parties to sue the Attorney General. And it expressly cited 552.325.
Now, counsel, can I interrupt real quick?
Yes, please.
So your position is that 552.325 creates a cause of action for a private entity against the AG? Is that?
Yes.
That's what I'm understanding, that it's a cause of action, and so it's waiving sovereign immunity?
Correct.
Okay. I take it then you're saying that's an unambiguous waiver of sovereign immunity in this case, that 325 creates. Is the fact that there's kind of dispute here lead any weight to the argument maybe that it's not unambiguous, that the fact that we're having to have this discussion about whether or not it weighs it or not makes it not unambiguous?
So I don't think so. I think the words themselves are very clear because it talks about a suit against the Attorney General in Travis County District Court, a lawsuit that waives immunity. But if there are any question about that, I think it's resolved by just a textual analysis. If you look at 552.324, that's the statute that says suit by a governmental body. It says the only suit by a governmental body that they can seek is a suit that is filed in the Travis County District Court against the Attorney General. Now, Zacher says that's a clear and unambiguous waiver, 324. But if you keep reading that statute, it says that suit is in accordance with section 552.325. In other words, the mechanism for the lawsuit in 324 is 325, and Zacher has already admitted that 324 waives sovereign immunity. So I think this is a clear and unambiguous waiver of sovereign immunity, no matter how you look at the statute. I don't think there's any ambiguity in it. And I think Boeing confirms it. And I think Justice Pemberton's concurrence that says sovereign immunity was waived was exactly right. So whether you're looking at the textual analysis, Supreme Court precedent, this court's own precedent, in the form of that concurrence, I think immunity is waived. I think that's established. And I just want to mention the genuine parts case, Justice Baker, which you authored for the court. In that case, genuine parts sued only the Attorney General to prevent disclosure of a settlement agreement. The AG in that case issued a letter ruling, and the trial court granted summary judgment in favor of the Attorney General. But this court held that when a citizen requests information that may also implicate the privacy or property of third parties, the Public Information Act permits the third party to raise the issue, and any applicable exception to the information's disclosure, here's the important part, with the Attorney General, in district court, or both. And that's what we're seeking here. We think the same reasoning applies. I see that my time is up, and I have ceded time for the Attorney General. So with the court's permission, I reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Yes, Ms. Fuchs, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. I will first address the issue that you're probably all wondering about. Why is the Attorney General here arguing that sovereign immunity has been waived? And the answer here is simply that the Attorney General's role in this type of proceeding is to interpret and enforce the PIA in the way that the legislature intended. The language of the statute is clear, and the ability of a private party to sue, to challenge a letter ruling, is a settled issue in the court. Both this court in genuine parts and the Supreme Court in Boeing refer specifically to the judicial remedy provided by to private parties under Section 325 of the PIA. Zacor correctly notes that sovereign immunity was not raised by the party in Boeing, and it wasn't in genuine parts either. However, Zacor also argues that the court is obliged to ascertain whether it has subject matter jurisdiction in a case before proceeding, whether or not it was raised by either party. And this is on page 3 of Zacor's surreply. So both this court and the Supreme Court examined 325, the Supreme Court in detail, and neither court questioned its jurisdiction. So under Zacor's own argument, the fact that sovereign immunity and subject matter jurisdiction were not raised by the parties simply does not matter. I want to provide this court with some context regarding the history and the regularity of cases like this. The Attorney General and the courts have long recognized third party rights in this type of case in the open records context. In 1992, the El Paso Court of Appeals recognized a private party had the right to sue to protect its privacy interests in Morales v. Ellen. And the cite to this case is 840 Southwest 2D 519. And this ruling occurred before the explicit language in 325 even existed. In 1995, the legislature first adopted language that's substantially similar to the language in 325 today. In the Open Government Handbook, which is published on the Attorney General website, and it provides open government guidance to governmental bodies throughout the state, the Attorney General explicitly says that 325 recognizes the legal interest in a private party to sue the Attorney General in court. And this is on page 60 of the current version of the handbook, which is again on the Attorney General website. So in over 25 years of this interpretation, not only being held by the Attorney General, but also stated in an official guidance publication, neither the courts nor the legislature have questioned 325 jurisdiction. And cases in which a private party sues the AG to challenge a letter ruling are extremely common. Currently, my division has 64 such cases, and in 35 of those, the private party sued only the AG, opting not to sue the governmental body. It's also clear that private parties do have rights under the PIA. Section 552.325B allows a private party to brief the Attorney General during the letter ruling phase, just as each of the other stakeholders, the governmental civil body and the requester, can. Each stakeholder must have an opportunity to vindicate those rights, not just two of the three stakeholders. And private party rights don't just encompass trade secret or property rights. Individual privacy rights, such as the one asserted by Ellen in the Morales case, are also often at issue. One of the suggestions made by Zacor in his briefing is that or other person or entity referenced in 325 of the PIA refers to section 3215, and that this section could have provided jurisdiction for the foundation to sue, But this is simply not true. 3215 only allows the district attorney or the AG to file suit, and it also only allows suit for the violation of a PIA, of the PIA, and releasing information in accordance with the letter ruling is not a violation of the PIA. So when Section 325 says other person or entity that files suit, it just simply cannot be referring to 3215. Thank you. I see that my time is up here, and I would just encourage this court to reverse the grant of the plea to the jurisdiction and remand to district court for disposition on the merits.
Thank you. And now, Zacor, Justice Wainwright, you may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. There are three topics that I want to address. First, the text of the statute, this only statute that the Cutter Foundation argues allows it to proceed in trial court without the governmental body that is the holder of the information in the lawsuit. Secondly, I want to address Boeing. And then finally, I want to come to some of the policy concerns that you raised, Chief Justice.
And also, Justice Wainwright, one question that, and I'm certain you'll get to it, is if Cutter is not the other person or entity referred to in 325, then who is? What do those words mean if they don't mean Cutter or insert any other private entity's name? And I'm sure you'll get there. Thank you. You may proceed.
You're right, Your Honor. I will get there. First, the text does not provide a clear and unambiguous waiver of immunity in 552.325. Justice Smith's question suggests the appropriate answer. That is, 0.325, as Cutter acknowledged, creates a cause of action. The Supreme Court has been clear that simply creating liability or simply creating a cause of action is not a clear and unambiguous waiver of sovereign immunity. I assume, Justices, that you received my oral argument bench book exhibits. Okay. If you'll look at Exhibit B, this government code statute 311.034 adopted the common law standard the Texas Supreme Court had been applying that says a waiver of sovereign immunity cannot be effected unless there's clear and unambiguous language. And then the Texas Supreme Court in the Wichita Falls case and the city of Galveston case said that such waiver must be beyond doubt. And even beyond that, the waiver must be with unmistakable clarity. And then in Exhibit C, you'll see a number of cases that we've cited to give the court the flavor and the context of how language such as sue and an entity may sue and be sued, plead and be pleaded. That was in reference to governmental bodies. The Texas Supreme Court said that is not a waiver of sovereign immunity. If you look at the chart regarding the Harris County Hospital versus Tomball case, that statute and the Health and Safety Code provided that the hospital district, quote, shall pay the claim made by the provider, creating, as Justice Smith asked, a cause of action. The Texas Supreme Court says, yes, that statute addressed liability, but it did not address waiver from suit.
And counsel, can I ask one question? As I look at a lot of these cases, a lot of these cases are dealing with the public fisc, the taxpayer dollars. Here, in this case, under the Public Information Act, we're dealing with documents that that the governmental body has or does not have. And so it's just producing documents, kind of like an in rem proceeding. Is there any distinction because this is producing documents and not paying over in cash taxpayer dollars and impacting the government fisc?
Actually, Chief Justice, they are one and the same. The information requested by Zacor information has to do with the funding of a campus, a Texas A&M University campus in the country of Qatar. The Attorney General opinion said that information that tends to identify the donor of funds cannot be recovered. That's a battle we may fight further in the trial court. But we also ask for the amount of the gifts and the donations, and we seek the contractual terms to find out how this public body, this institution of higher education, Texas A&M University, is handling that campus in Qatar, what the funding is, how much funding A&M has, and all of that relates to the transparency that the public is entitled to know what its public institutions, its governmental entities are doing. Texas A&M University receives substantial state appropriations. So the public fisc is directly at issue to obtain this information so that there is transparency and the public knows exactly what is going on with the funding for that relationship with the campus at Qatar. Going right to the text now, Exhibit D of my bench book. Qatar's counsel argued that 0.324, 552.324, which is in the next Exhibit E on the second page, where it says the only suit a governmental body may file seeking to withhold information from a requester is a suit filed in Travis County District Court against the Attorney General in accordance with 552.325. 0.324 tells the governmental body where it may file suit. And it also is a waiver of immunity for the governmental body to sue the Attorney General. The Texas Supreme Court held in the City of Galveston versus State of Texas case that even governmental bodies in Texas have to find a legislative, clear and unambiguous waiver of immunity to sue another governmental body. That's why this waiver is there.
Counsel, can I interrupt real quick?
Yes.
Can a third party assert sovereign immunity on behalf of the state?
Yes, it may, because the issue is subject matter jurisdiction. If a trial court has no power to decide a case, then it is inappropriate for a trial court to make discovery rulings, hear and rule on motions, and proceed down that alley when it has not been authorized to even hear the case. This is different from the cases cited by Qatar, where there were defenses that were personal to parties that reduced their liability or preempted certain damages or all damages. This is a question of subject matter jurisdiction, and in the past had been held or viewed as being an obligation of the trial court to consider in the first instance. The trial court didn't have to consider it sui sponte because ZACOR, we raised it by plea to the jurisdiction, and the trial court agreed and held there was no jurisdiction to hear this matter. Now, if I may go back to the text in Exhibit D. Qatar relies on the language or other person or entity that files a suit seeking to withhold information. That does not say or other person or entity may file suit. It does not say that some other person has a waiver of immunity to sue the Attorney General or the state. It is descriptive. It conveys that if a governmental body or other person or entity can properly bring a suit, then it cannot sue the requester. If you look at the House bill analysis when this statute 0.325 was passed, it made clear the purpose of 0.325 is to prohibit suits against the requester. The requester must not be dragged into such litigation, as this court so expressed and held in Lake Travis ISD versus Lovelace in 2007. That's the purpose of 0.325. It does not contain the unmistakable clarity of a waiver of immunity that the Texas Supreme Court and jurisprudence in this state requires.
Do you believe that the statute has to say the magic words, does not waive sovereign immunity? Or is there something short of that that constitutes an unambiguous waiver?
The undisputed, clear, and unambiguous waiver is the language you mentioned, Chief Justice, that the legislature waives sovereign immunity so that a governmental body may be sued. We don't have that here, not close. The Supreme Court has held that if there is language that with unmistakable clarity conveys that the legislature intended to let the king, to use that metaphor, or the queen be sued, then that can also constitute a waiver. But we don't have that here. We do not have the permission, the authorization to sue in point 325. We merely have the descriptive language that if a suit can be brought, you can't sue the requester in 325. There is no waiver sovereign immunity there. And in fact, the Texas Supreme Court has held that if there is any doubt as to the construction, as to whether there is sovereign immunity waiver, then that ambiguity is resolved in favor of retaining immunity. The Harris County Hospital District versus Tomball case squarely holds that, as do other cases out of the Texas Supreme Court. Now I'd like to move to the Boeing case. To some extent, Cutter's counsel accurately cited what Boeing held, as did to some extent the Attorney General's office. But it needs to be clear that Boeing only decided what it decided. This is Boeing's brief on the merits out of the Texas Supreme Court, drafted, signed by a former Texas Supreme Court justice. Nowhere in this brief does it mention the word immunity. Nowhere in Boeing's reply brief does it mention the word immunity. The Texas Supreme Court Boeing opinion nowhere mentions the word immunity. And in fact, the Attorney General's briefing in that case does not mention immunity. And the Port Authority of San Antonio, the public entity that was in the Boeing case, unlike our case, where Cutter did not bring in Texas A&M University and Texas A&M did not get involved in this case, but even the Port Authority of San Antonio's briefing in the Boeing Texas Supreme Court case did not mention the word immunity. Boeing did not decide waiver of sovereign immunity under point 325. Boeing decided exactly what you said, Justice Baker, in the genuine parts case, that there is a right, there is standing. It did not decide that there's a waiver of sovereign immunity. This court very insightfully held in Bacon versus Texas Historical Commission in 2013 that there is a distinction between standing and waiver of sovereign immunity. Boeing expressly held their standing. Boeing did not address sovereign immunity. The other case out of this court that addressed standing versus waiver and distinguished them very clearly, Grossman versus Wolf, 2019 case. It held both, but standing and sovereign immunity, while both components of subject matter jurisdiction, are entirely distinct jurisdictional concepts. A plaintiff seeking to challenge governmental action must establish one, that he has standing, and two, that sovereign immunity does not bar his challenge. Now, traditionally, jurisprudence presumed that if there was not a waiver of sovereign immunity, that was a matter of subject matter jurisdiction, and the courts at every stage had a duty to raise that and consider it sui sponte. But as Zaycor's brief points out, in the Engelman case, the Texas Supreme Court adopted a concurring opinion by Justice Hecht that we have never said, this is the court statement, Supreme Court, we have never said that a trial court has a duty to raise sovereign immunity on its own. So Engelman shows that sovereign immunity has to be raised by the parties. It was not in Boeing, it was not addressed in Boeing, and even Boeing and the Texas Supreme Court's opinion do not mention at any point in the body of the opinions or the briefs the word immunity.
Can I ask you one thing?
Yes.
Just to make sure I fully understand, I see like three options for your argument. 325 doesn't waive immunity. I think that's your position.
Yes, Justice.
Is it your position that 325 can waive immunity if Texas A&M were in it as a party? Or it still doesn't waive immunity because there's no jurisdiction because A&M's not a party and there can't be any relief. So they're
very
like,
insightful. Very insightful, Chief Justice. The second alternative is correct.
So it can waive immunity if we just have the right party in the case.
The governmental body has a clear and unambiguous waiver of sovereign immunity to sue the attorney general when it disagrees with the attorney general's opinion to disclose public information. If this case were constructed with the same parties as Boeing, then we would have to follow Boeing. But let's look at the distinctions. In Boeing, again, the Port Authority, the public entity from which the documents, the information was sought, was a party. And it wasn't just a party. The Port Authority was the petitioner in the Texas Supreme Court, seeking, quote, by its own words, review of the opinion of the Third Court of Appeals ordering release of certain commercially sensitive lease information. In addition, the port, quote, joined in Boeing's request that the lease contain Boeing's proprietary information should not be turned over. Okay.
But isn't it, if you waive immunity to one, don't you waive immunity to all? Or no?
Chief Justice, I don't think so. It's different because sovereign immunity is a very high barrier, mm-hmm. very high hurdle. We have one of the strongest common law immunity jurisprudence in the country. And we have very clear statutory and Supreme Court guidance on what it takes to clear that hurdle. And it is a rare incident when that hurdle is cleared. So then look at our case. Zacor requested the information. Texas A&M responded and objected. A cutter had an opportunity during the administrative process while the Attorney General was considering the request, and Cutter submitted its objections. It then went to the Travis County District Court. Cutter sued the Attorney General, we believe improperly, without a waiver of sovereign immunity. Texas A&M University had the right and the opportunity to get involved in that suit as the public body with the information. In fact, without A&M being in the case, the entity from which that disclosure can be ordered is not even in the case, going to our indispensable party point, but I'll stay with sovereign immunity. So in Boeing, the Port Authority was a petitioner and sought relief. It was in the case. In our case, the public body, the governmental body with information is not in the case, which makes us materially and importantly different from Boeing. Again, Boeing did not decide our case. The Texas Supreme Court, some 250 years of legal experience, probably over 150 years total of judicial experience, would have said immunity if it was waiving immunity. It is too important. That is not something they would have suggested or allowed an inference. You heard Cutter's counsel say, we read 0.325 to mean that's not sufficient, to mean a waiver. That's not sufficient. It has to be clear and unambiguous. And the Supreme Court would have said so if that's what it was doing. I agree with Ms. Fuchs and the Attorney General's office. Boeing decided standing, as she said, not sovereign immunity. We agree with that position of the Attorney General during this oral argument.
Now, let's can I interject? You might be getting to it. I just wanted you, if you could briefly explain to me why Texas A&M is a jurisdictionally indispensable party in this case. I think you'd mentioned it a couple times.
Well, under 0.325 and 0.324, the governmental body, in our case, Texas A&M University, has a clear and unambiguous waiver of sovereign immunity to sue the Attorney General for these provisions in the Public Information Act. So Texas A&M could have sued, and Cutter could have then joined in, or they both could have sued together. But Texas A&M is not in the case, and that waiver under 0.324, related 0.325, is not been affected. A waiver is as to a particular entity for particular claims with unmistakable clarity. Did that answer your question, Justice Smith?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let me get to the policy consideration that you raised, Chief Justice, regarding confidential information in contracts between private entities and governmental bodies and protection. The legislature provided two very important ways, and the only two ways we need to protect that information. One, during the administrative process, while the Attorney General's office is considering disclosure of requested information, the private entity can submit objections and reasons why to the Attorney General that information should not be disclosed. The Attorney General has been authorized by the Texas legislature to make that decision. That is a process that Cutter took advantage of in this case. The other way, the way that most lay people think of, you file a lawsuit. The legislature has provided a clear avenue for the holder of Cutter's confidential information, to the extent it is, to file a lawsuit and keep that information from being disclosed as indicated by the Attorney General.
And counsel, I will allow you to continue to answer this question because you are answering a question of the court. So you may continue. My apologies for interrupting.
No, thank you, Chief Justice. My apologies. I did not notice that my time had expired. I will promptly wrap up this point. Those two avenues, administrative due process and the ability for Texas A&M to have sued in this case or have come into the case at any point in the lawsuit, would then have affected a waiver of sovereign immunity so that there would have been subject matter jurisdiction for the trial court to hear and decide this. That would protect the contractual, potentially sensitive information through those two avenues. Remember, the PIA is intended to provide transparency for the public when a public institution is impacting the public fisc, as happened here. We ask the court to affirm the trial court's ruling.
Thank you. And counsel for Cutter, why in A&M here? Why didn't y'all drag them in? And then we could have saved this whole hearing, according to Counsel Wainwright. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. And just as a preliminary, I'm going to avoid any reference to the British royalty, given what's occurred in the news lately. But to answer your question directly, the Public Information Act itself provides that private parties may have, aside from governmental entities, privacy or property interest at stake in an information request. And that's why you have 552.104 and 552.110. In fact, a governmental entity may not care whether or not the information is disclosed. That's not its issue. The issue is the private entities. And that's why you have a mechanism for private entities to sue. Counsel mentioned the bill analysis, and he said it constrains this court from saying that immunity was waived. But in that bill analysis itself, it's dated April 26, 1995, it says that section 552.325 is added to determine the parties to a suit to withhold information and, quote, specifies that parties seeking to withhold information may sue only the Attorney General. That's in the bill analysis. And I think that supports the text. It supports the Boeing interpretation and Justice Pemberton's analysis. Now, this point is very important. The next one I'm going to make, I made it before, but I just want to make sure it's clear that Zacher concedes, it says in its brief, that 552.324 itself waives governmental immunity. And Zacher is right. It says the governmental body may file a suit seeking to withhold information in a suit that is filed in Travis County District Court through the mechanism provided in Section 325. In other words, the only reason 324 waives immunity is because 325 waives immunity. And if 325 waives immunity, then we are another person or entity entitled to sue the Attorney General. Then the Hillman, the court, the Zacher relies a lot on Hillman. And this goes, Chief Justice, directly to your point about the fiscal response, the fiscal impact. In Hillman, the court looks at several factors on whether immunity is waived without doubt. And factors one and three in Hillman, I'm going to shortcut it, waive immunity under that analysis. The statute does not threaten financial liability, which was a key concern of factor number four. So I think Hillman supports our argument here. Your Honors, what we're trying to do is invoke 325 that says a private entity may sue the Attorney General to protect information. And the trial court dismissed the case and wouldn't let us get to the merits of whether our information, as the Attorney General in its second letter agreed with, that the information goes to competitive bidding and trade secrets, which are protected under the statute. We weren't permitted to make that argument. We think that this court should remand the case to the trial court so that we can argue the merits of our asserted ability to protect this information. And for all of those reasons, we ask that the court reverse the trial court's dismissal on a plea to the jurisdiction and remand it to the trial court for further proceedings. And unless there are further questions, I'll give up the balance of my time.
It doesn't look like my fellow justices have any additional questions. I want to thank you all for a well-delivered argument on all sides of this case. I greatly appreciate your thoughtful words today, as well as your quality briefing. Thank you so much. This case will be submitted, and this court stands in recess. Thank you all. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.